This workshop is Navigating Through Different Career Paths. Our moderator is Mrs. Maria Yao, who is a research coordinator at the Toronto District School Board, specialized in research on youth's social and emotional well-being. Dedicated ministry worker with youth and family, serves on the board of Across Your Heart. Our panelist is Mr. Nathan Ho, Ms. Rebecca Liu, Mr. Glendon Tang, and Mr. Jeremy Ting.
Okay, good evening, everyone. So I'm Maria. I will be the moderator for tonight with the four young panelists here. Let me give you some little bit of background first. I guess every one of you agrees that youth unemployment or youth underemployment has been a global phenomenon. Okay, we cannot deny that. Because of economic recession and because of the rapid change technologically, socially, and I would even say demographically. Just give you a very small example. In a lot of developed countries, including Canada or Hong Kong or Japan or whatever, we have fewer and fewer babies. So schools, more and more schools are being closed. And instead of hiring, more and more teachers are being laid off. So I strongly encourage all the young people here today, start producing more babies. Otherwise, there will be no more jobs in the future. Okay, side joke. But one thing is that, ironically, it seems to us that university graduates were the hardest hit. With the last few decades, when we see a big shift in people enrolling in university, and now we can see a lot of unemployment among the university pool. And I'm very quickly thinking back of my own generation, which is baby boomer generations, and many of your baby boomer generations. Although we may not have as many resources as these young people or our children have today, but to be honest, for graduates to find a job at that time, I would say it was quite attainable. Is it true? I think so. And for us to keep the same career or promotion or mobility, I would say also have been quite achievable. However, for the last 10 years, we've been witnessing that more and more young people, especially the so-called post-80s and post-90s, those young people that are coming out, we've heard a lot that it's very hard for them to land a job that matches the field of study. And a lot may have given up, and we heard a lot of stories about that. Some may be forced to go back to school to further the study or to pursue another career, I mean, another degree. Or there's some who have to yield to reality and then they have to just take any jobs, part-time job, temporary job, whatever, or something that's unrelated to their field of studies or whatever. But the worst scenario I've found is that even for the latter group, sometimes they even couldn't get an interview despite hundreds of letters being sent out. Obviously, it's a big disappointment and frustration for our young people, and it will be affecting, I think, their self-esteem, affecting their aspirations, sometimes even affecting their employability in the long run. So, but I will assure you, even for us as parents, though, even parents, we might have still have a career, maybe successful careers, at least careers, I don't think parents are not unaffected. I think parents also feel worried. Don't you agree with me? Parents are desperate. Parents sometimes feel helpless. I have a chance to talk with one of my colleagues, a parent. I found it very sad, his conversation, that she's telling me that she feels so depressed, but she has a job though, because she said, at least when her children were young, she could find ways to help her or help them with difficulties when they're in school or whatever. But now when it comes to time for employment, when it comes to job hunting, there's not much she could do. She found it helpless. Don't you agree with me? Especially with immigrants, when we have very limited resources, very limited social network or connections. So I myself as a parent, I have two children, and my two children are post-90s, girls of house. So at least they are still in post-secondary education. I'm buying time right now. I'm not sure about their future either. But instead of continue to panic, I'll start thinking that we should do something else. And it's three things. First, I think we should start re-examine, reflect, rethink about a preconceived notion of what do we mean by success, of what do we mean by career path. I think we have to start rethinking that instead of sticking with our baby boomers' expectations, university, find a job, career, children, family, like that. So we have to re-examine that. The second thing is that I guess we have to understand the realities, the current realities, and understand the challenges that they have been facing. Be empathetic. And of course, finally, we hope to find ways to work with them, to support them with the future possibilities. It's not easy, but I think we have to change our attitude. So I think the best way to do it, no better way to do it than to hear directly from our young people who have gone through, some of them gone through different stages of their journey, life journey, career journey. So tonight we have the four panelists here, as Marie just talked about. And I'll just give you a little bit format so you can be have some anticipation, what's next. So four panelists here, and I know the time, although we have an hour or so, but we have a lot to do. So first of all, I would like to have each panelist to quickly, very quickly, within 3 or 4 minutes, to talk about, I think it's a visual to show that their path, the post-secondary path, that means after high school, what's the path or journey up to now at this point? Okay. Then I have a couple of questions for him or her to answer. And then I want him or her to also give some advice to the audience, to the parents and youth. So everyone will take a turn. So once everybody finishes their turn, then I will have one general question for all of them to respond to. Then I will make a concluding remark. Then we can open the floor for questions. And the questions I asked Marie, I think you can use Chinese if you feel more comfortable to use Chinese to ask your questions, okay? So it will be very exciting and it will be quite interactive, but because of the time, so I will ask you to keep all your questions to the last 15 minutes of the session, okay? Yeah, so let me first have Jeremy, who's the youngest among the four of the panelists here. And so Jeremy, can you share your story?
So up here we have my, I guess, timeline of all the schools that I went through. So I graduated from in high school from Thornley Secondary School. I actually took a leap year, but it was kind of like a half leap year. So one of the things my parents always told me to do is you always have to be doing something. So I went to Tyndale University. I went to discover myself, even with my spirituality. And I just really just took this time to really think about what I wanted to do. So after that, I moved to Brock University. That's the first university that I applied to, that I got accepted to. I studied business economics. In time, about a year later, a year and a half, in my second semester, I actually left Brock University because I found that it wasn't something that I enjoyed. I mean, I could do it, but whether or not it was my passion was another thing. So I then moved to Seneca College. Now the whole thing is, college. It's not university. Well, later on we're going to talk about it, but my life at college now, studying business marketing is definitely my passion. It's definitely been my most exciting 2 years of my life. And now I even have a job at Seneca. I'm the vice president of Seneca Recreational Council. I deal with a lot of students and try to engage the student body as a whole and bring everyone closer to school, I guess. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Great, okay. So you have a smaller version. Yeah, can you see that? So even though Jerry is young, he's still only 22, for 4 years, you can see that his path is not straight already. Okay, you can see he has zigzagged a little bit. Okay, so Jeremy, I have a question for you. You have experienced both university and college. So can you tell us the difference between these two types of education? Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's the benefit for you?
So for me, what I noticed in university, you go to lectures, you have 300 students per class. So there's a lot of pressure. I mean, like, you're just a number, really, to the teacher. It's non-personal. And you're pretty much just judged based on your scores. I noticed also that the university style of job hiring is a lot of recruitment processes. So you have big, large corporations going to the school, and then you get handpicked based on your scores and your involvement in the school. So, and a lot of students, especially with 300 students per class. It's not engaging. You have really no reason to stay at school. You go into class, you listen to your lectures, you go home, you do your homework, you write tests, and then it's a cycle. It's like that. Not a lot of people are really engaged, even on residence. You know, there's a lot of residential life happening rather than student life happening. So from there, I noticed that my grades started slipping because I wasn't really paying attention or really didn't have a lot of passion in what I was studying. And so I then moved on to going to college. Now, when I went to college, you know, of course I felt, oh man, my pay is going to just hit the floor because, you know, it's not university. But really, it's not that, it's not true, because when I went to college, I immediately noticed the classroom sizes. They're from 20 to 30 people, and therefore I felt I got to develop great relationships with not just my people in my class, but also with my teachers as well. And so in college, another thing, because it's all group-based and stuff like that, you also have a lot of teamwork activities that you do. Now, like I said earlier, the university is more recruitment. For college, you do a lot of work in second year, after first year, you do a lot of work for companies where they assign tasks to schools and then they pretty much have like a competition. But it's really engaging and it really gives you a sense of how the real world is right now. Because, like I said, when I was in university, everything's very theory-based, and it's not very practical. You know, you want to go to university, you get all the good, you know how to survive when a problem is put in front of you. But what college trains you to do is to work out through a problem with your team, and they actually offer a lot of resources to help you out, even when you're struggling and stuff like that. So I just want to clarify with you guys that, like, in my opinion, I think that college actually has, in terms of getting a job, it's a lot easier to go to college and get a job after college because you have a lot of relationships with companies coming out of college. And you'll see, I talked to a lot of students as well, you'll see that a lot of university students who have gone, who graduate and they go through months and months of looking for a job, they can't find a job, so what do? They go to college.
And I think it's very true, especially also in our school board. We also encourage parents and students that there's always multiple pathways to success. There's only not one way. And I think Jeremy, I have another question for you. I was wondering, when you switched from university of the second year to college, how did your parents, your parents here today, tonight?
Yes, my mom's sitting over there. Raise your hand, mom. Where's
your mom? Okay.
I love my mom, guys.
Okay, so you can feel free to say anything now. So how did your parents react to it in terms of initially and yeah? So how did the supporter react about this whole thing?
Well, first off, I'm going to begin with not doing well in university was not my first failure. Okay, and my life has life has generally revolved around failures and how we learn from them. So actually, it's not on my timeline, but I went to 3 different high schools prior to university. I moved around a lot, and I got to experience a lot of different schools. So I was very good at always starting over, but it's a matter of, like, when are you going to stop starting over, and when are you going to actually get your life straight? So this was pretty much probably my, was a really big turning point for me when I brought up to my parents. I pretty much said, you know, I'm not doing well this semester. I don't want to go on probation. I just want to switch to another school where I know I can do well, where I know where I can get my passion straight and do what I love. And so I actually have a Bible verse here that I wanted to read. It's from Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 to 13. It says, "Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." So, what that verse means to me is that it's really not what we need here on earth. It's a matter of, you know, what the Lord has planned for me. And so that's what, I really thought about, you know. It's like, do I have to succumb to the pressure of society and I have to take a certain path to get to success, But really, nowadays, you know, it's a lot different. Like she was saying, the baby boomer age, which is maybe you guys, you know, back then, it was, that was the way to get a job. Because, you know, there you go to school, and there were very limited universities, so it's a competition to get into school. And then from school, you believe that it's a program that will get you a job. But nowadays, the jobs are so demanding, we have so many educated students, it's not just about education. Going back, how did my parents handle it? They pretty much said, you know what, we trust you. You're old enough, okay? Because, you know, you can't always be a helicopter over your kids for the rest of their life. And you have to be able to be comfortable with letting your kid go, you know? I mean, you'll experience it when your kids leave the house, right? So, like, you have to, my parents pretty much just said, okay, we support you, and we'll do our best to get you, to help you. And that's all really I needed, because ultimately the decision is mine, and ultimately I just need people to support me. I don't need to be lost in, you know, thoughts of failure, and like, because then you just go into a depression cycle, and you know, my whole life I've been trying to get out of that, and always just focus on what I have and be thankful for what I have.
And one more question, Jeremy. You just talked about it's not only about our future success, it's not about education. So what advice you would give to the young people here and parents about how to prepare ourselves for our own future?
Okay, so I can use an example of my life and how I treated school. When I went to university, like I said, the population was humongous. It was unbearable. You couldn't know everybody in school. You don't know if you're meeting the right people or the wrong people. So when I went to college, I said to myself, okay, you know what, I'm going to take a different approach. I'm going to get involved. All right, so like you see, my current job, I'm the vice president of Santa Cruz Recreational Council. And the reason why is because I have friends. Okay, that's pretty much it. Is I met the right people. I got involved in the right places where God put the right people in front of me and gave me the right opportunity to get involved. And I became part of Recreational Council. So if I were to bring that back, one of my best advice to give is join a club or, you know, get a mentor, because mentors are always good, and just get involved. Just try to join the extracurricular activities, the activities that pretty much engage you with school so that homework doesn't seem like it's just homework. You do homework, yeah, sure, it's part of homework, but when I go to class, I talk to my classmates about my homework. I say, oh, so what do you guys do? Why? Because I'm trying to engage conversation with, you know, my fellow classmates so that, you know, I can get the right friends. You know, my mom always told me two things when you go into any new class. You sit at the front, and you go sit right beside the smartest kid in class. And because of those two things, you know, I really focus on that. And you meet great people like this. You know, you are what you eat, and so you have to pay attention to that.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy. Okay. Now, the second one is the only female panelist we have tonight. So, Rebecca.
Hello. Okay. So after high school, I had no idea what job or career I wanted. I did fairly well in high school, so I just decided to do what I thought my parents preferred me to do, which was to go into science. So I went to University of Toronto in their science program. And once I was there, I decided that I would want to do a specialize in neuroscience. Unfortunately, the first year, I did really badly in chemistry. Like, I was getting 50s. I was crying a lot. Yeah, I said that too. I cried a lot. I cried 3 times per exam, once while studying, once right after the exam, and once after I got the exam results. So I dropped the course, and because I dropped chemistry, I couldn't get into neuroscience anymore. So I decided, instead of staying and trying to retake the course, it was something I clearly couldn't do at this level, even though I could do it well in high school. I switched into psychology and got into the research specialist program. So I thought, okay, like, this is really interesting. Maybe I'll just stay in research and stay in academics for my career. Halfway through the program, I realized I really hated research. I really liked what I was studying. I just hated stats, and I thought it just wasn't for me. So I applied to law school instead. I went to law school at University of Toronto and had no idea what I was going to do when I got out, because I really didn't know very much about the law when I got in. But luckily I found a job, a summer job at a really large law firm. They have about over 600 lawyers in Canada alone, and they're an international law firm. So I worked there in the summer. And to be a lawyer in Ontario, you have to do an internship for 10 months. It's called articling. So they hired me back to article there. I finished articling last year in 2013, but I wasn't hired back. So there were 17 articling students at that firm that hired 14, and I was one of three who wasn't hired back, and I was very devastated. My parents were very devastated as well. Because the job market, even for lawyers, is really bad right now because the economy is so bad. So I talked to a lot of the lawyers who are at the firm. The bosses at law firms are called partners, and I basically had coffees with each of them, and they helped me find a job. And so the job I'm at now is a small firm with 10 lawyers, and I practice mostly labor law, so I represent unions when people get fired or whatever. So that's what I do now, and I'm really happy where I'm at.
So Rebecca, in a way I think you're very blessed, lucky to be able to land a job quite soon after your graduation from law school. I think you talked about you've been working with a big firm for articulating, and then now you go to the small firm, and you're very happy about that. I would like to ask you why you find it happier in a smaller firm, and I know that you said it's a substantially lower pay than the large firm. Can you tell us what's the difference between these two firms that makes you happier to stay even though with the lower pay?
So I can really only compare big firms and small firms in the context of the law, like of the industry of law, but I suspect a lot of these differences are true in other industries as well. So when I was in law school, I wanted to go to a big firm because A, it was higher pay, better benefits. B, I thought big firms, they get big for a reason. They're successful for a reason because they do good work. And as a new lawyer, I want to learn from good lawyers. And three, it's prestigious. And I also wanted to do cutting edge work. So I thought any really cool case is going to go to a big firm, and I want to be there. I didn't move to a small firm because I thought I wanted to. It was sort of forced on me. That was the job I found. That was the job that was available to me at the time. So I took it. But in hindsight, it was probably the best thing that could have happened to me. So at a small firm, there's 10 lawyers. I'm the newest. I have the least experience at the firm. But at a small firm, you'd work directly for the big partners. So at the big firm, there's a multi-million-dollar case. The person with 30 years experience is in charge of it. He delegates different tasks to someone with 20 years experience, who delegates some tasks to someone with 10 years experience, who delegates to someone with 5 years experience, who delegates to me. So by the time it comes to me, I'm working really hard on this really tiny thing. I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm not sure how it fits into the big case, but I'm working really hard on it. And what I do may or may not ultimately be used. At a small firm, I work directly with the partner. I understand what the case is. I have a bigger responsibility because there's less people. So even though I only have 7 months' experience, I've done things that my friends at the big firm haven't done yet. And they probably won't do it until they're about 2 years out. So it's a little bit scary because it's more informal. You're kind of thrown into the water. But if you like responsibility and you like trying new things, then it's really great for you because you're doing things that more senior lawyers do. And I'm often against lawyers with much more experience than me. The second thing is, I feel like at this small firm, I have more ownership and I'm more proud of the firm. So I'm involved with, you know, the firm has meetings with all the lawyers about their vision for the firm and how they see the firm growing in 5 years' time. And they involve all the lawyers, even me, in terms of what we can do to grow the firm, how can we attract new clients, where do we want to grow. At a big firm, I would never be involved in that. I have no idea when they land big clients. I have no idea who their new clients are. I don't even know who their clients are sometimes. So it's just a very different level of involvement. And also my hours are a lot better at the small firm. Like, I went from working 90 hours to working like maybe 50 or 60 a week, which is, I think, more the norm. And that obviously makes me happy. But Auntie Maria's right. You get less pay, less benefits. And I think if you want to work at a small firm, you need to do your research better about that firm. There are some really, really good small firms that do really good work. And then there are some small firms that do really bad work. So I think, you know, with big firms, you can kind of trust that they'll be okay. But with small firms, you do have to do your research.
I have another question for you, and this would go back to your university year. When you said that you did fairly well in high school, which a lot of Chinese students, they did, with 90 or something, supposed to get on to university. But you said you realized just the first year that, wow, how strong the other people are at university. So I was wondering, that realization, how did it affect you? Did it discourage you? Or I don't know how. And also affects the rest of your university years.
So I was really sad, cried a lot. I didn't understand how I could, you know, you get so used to doing really well and sort of being near the top of the class, and then all of a sudden, like, I get 50, like, regularly in chemistry. It was devastating because all of a sudden I felt stupid compared to other people. But my parents were good at encouraging me to find out what I was good at. So maybe my talent is not in science, even though I was sufficiently competent to do well in high school. I think once it gets to a harder level, that's just not how my brain works. It wasn't made to do science work. And so I discovered I was good at psychology. That was the course I took. That was one of the courses I took in first year. It was one of the few courses I did well without struggling. And so I just took that as I'm meant to do this because I'm good at it. And so it didn't really affect me the rest of university because I just got out of what I was bad at, found out what I was good at, and stuck with what I was good at. And if I hadn't done that, if I stuck with science, I wouldn't have gotten to law school. My grades were terrible in science. But, yeah. So it didn't really affect me after first year once I left all that behind.
So, Rebecca, what is your advice for young people, especially with regards to so-called mistakes or failure or this kind of thing?
It's okay. Everyone makes them. I made tons. Like, I did really badly in first year. I didn't even finish the first LSAT I took, which is the test you have to take to get into law school. I was actually doing so badly, I just walked out and canceled my score in the middle. I didn't get hired back. And they're all really devastating to me because at the time, I really thought that was the end of the world. But it's not. So even though it feels that way, you just keep telling yourself in your mind, you like fake it to yourself, you fake your confidence and you fake that everything will be okay. And I think if you can fake it and you can make people, if you can make other people believe it, then it's going to happen. So I faked it to my new employer that I was very confident about my abilities when I was looking for a job, even though at the time I thought, oh man, I must have really screwed up. I must be really stupid that they didn't hire me back. But I faked enough confidence in the interview. They didn't know what happened. And they hired me. So I think sometimes there's that. And B, I think for parents, my parents were really, I think they were very worried, I think, because they probably also thought I would never find a job. Because that's how I felt. When you're a new lawyer, there's no advertisements for jobs. No one posts openings. You have to just call around and hope you are apply at the right time. So I'm sure they were very worried, but they didn't try to give me advice, and they didn't tell me how worried they were. All they kept saying to me was that they were praying for me and that they had their friends praying for me, and they just tried to support me and encouraging me, just reminding me that I'm good at what I do. And I think that was emotionally, that was what I needed so that I could get a new job or overcome what I was trying to overcome at that moment.
Good. Thank you, Rebecca. But look at Rebecca's map one more time, career journey. Even though she's young, I think she has zigzag or detour slightly at least from neuroscience to psychology research and then to law schools and then from big firm to small firm. So again, it's not a straight path. Now, it's Glendon. Before you look at Glendon's piece, okay, put your safety seatbelts on. I when I looked at his map even this morning, I was a little bit dizzy. I was looking at that, but it's a very interesting story. So, yeah, ready? Yeah, for that.
So no, it'll come up. So yes, if you suffer from motion sickness, please just be careful. Okay, so let's start with undergrad. Okay. Yeah, I did economics actually at the University of Western Ontario. That's what it was known as back then, in London. And while I was there, I was doing, it was actually a 3-year degree. Please note, it took me 4 years to complete it, but I did. But while I was there, I actually started a home-based PC repair business with a roommate. And I also served as the VP of worship at the Asian Christian Fellowship. Okay? These will come into play later. Following that, I graduated, came out, and I worked at a medium-sized computer company as a sales and service administrator, offering customers technical solutions. So not really related to economics, but you know what? It was in line with, you know, kind of the business that I started in London. So I took it, and I learned from it. But I only did that for about a year. You see, after a while, I decided, you know what? I actually wanted to be a teacher. And so when I was 24, basically, I was doing after-school programs. I was volunteering. And eventually, I applied to Teachers College. Okay? So what happened? Did I get in? No. Okay. Did not get in. Got turned upside down. But you know what was really cool? God took that, turned it, and allowed me to become an assistant second photographer with a high-end wedding photography studio in Toronto. Okay? So it was because I didn't get in that I was able to take this opportunity. I can't go into the details of how I got this opportunity, but again, God. At the same time, I also started shooting under my own entity called Glendon Tang Photography. This was pretty, I guess, life-changing for me too. Just it changed how I organized my life, organized my finances, how I worked with customers. You know, so it kind of was pretty important for me. So, but I decided, you know what, photography and wedding photography in particular may not be the lifestyle that I wanted. And really, teaching and investing in kids was what I really wanted to do. I was like, you know what, I really want to do this. So what do I have to do? Well, what happened? I went back to Western. Went back to Western. This was, made the decision actually in September. This was the first week. Frosh Week had already finished. Decision made September. Got to speak to an academic counselor, and basically they said, okay, here's what you have. You can, basically I wanted to upgrade from a 3-year to a 4-year degree. In order to reapply. And they said, you can either start this year or next year, which was like right away. Now, I haven't been back to school for about 3 years. Okay, but you know what? I said, let's go. So I went to Western. But the funny thing is, in the middle of that year, I went to a Christian photographer retreat. Okay, there, actually, God did confirm, you know what? Photography is not my passion. I think I'm pretty good at it. And yet, it's not what I really wanted to do. And in fact, I sense the Lord calling me into full-time ministry. So, I was like, okay, full-time ministry. That's what I'm going to do. But is it? Because here's the problem. In April of that same year, I got accepted into York's Bachelor of Education program. And so, what did I do? I took it. Okay? I accepted the offer from York. I got my B.Ed. I became a certified teacher. Okay? And so what happened then? Well, the year after that, I got married, and I actually got to teach grade 5 in a private Christian school downtown. So I did get to do the teaching thing. Is the story over? No. Because you know, the time came, it was coming to the end of the year, right? And started to think about what would be bringing me back to teaching. In all honesty, it was a very difficult year. For any of you who know people who are teachers, or who are teachers yourselves, you know, the first year of teaching is probably one of the most difficult years ever. But I had to wrestle through, was it just because it's the first year of teaching, or was it something about teaching that I didn't like, or did God have something in me and created me in a certain way that, you know what, my heart was not really in the classroom. I love the teaching, and for those of you who are teachers, know that the teaching part, standing in front of a group, teaching is a very small part of the actual job. You have your administration, all the planning, all the marking, report cards, and again, speaking to you guys, parents, right? And at the same time, you're working with kids who probably already don't like school, right? So, regardless, long story short, I actually decided that I wasn't going back to teaching. I love teaching, but it wasn't in the classroom. And so I actually got into Tyndale's in-ministry MDiv program. At the same time, I'm also the worship director for the English congregation at T3C. I can honestly say that I think it was about time I stopped running from God. But the timing and the pieces all came together because perhaps, you know, later on I'll be able to explain, like, all the things that I've gone through, it's definitely not a straight line, and yet all the things that I've gone through have been able to build to where I am today.
Okay, so do you remember his path? I want him to repeat again. Okay. So by far, Landon, you're the one with the most tours. We are still waiting for Nathan's piece. But I could see that your journey has involved a lot of crossroads, struggles, challenges. I don't know whether even sometimes disappointment, feel like, I don't know, but giving up, so on and so forth. I wonder what keeps you going on and on without giving up, keep on trying, and until you come to this point, to your kind of destiny.
What stopped me from giving up or quitting? I think, honestly, a lot of it, obviously, is my faith in trusting that God is good. I grew up in a Christian family. I grew up in a Christian home, and that was a blessing to me. But I think in some ways, the way that God made me, too, is I like finding new ways of doing things. Routine is actually very difficult for me, as my wife can attest to. But I love finding new ways. I love finding, like, my love for technology plays into my job now. And yet, at the same time, you know, not being satisfied and not being willing to give up. Because if God is good and God is working all around us, it's our job to open our eyes to see what is God doing. Right? I mean, I had the opportunity, you know, I didn't get into teacher's college. I spent all this time volunteering, boom, what do you do? But it's because I didn't get in, I had the opportunity to shoot with a studio that most people would kill to get an opportunity to do. You know, even now, I still get to shoot just other things. And in fact, it's because I was a photographer that connected me to my teaching job later. So in some ways, you know, it goes back to what Jeremy was talking about, you know, kind of making connections with people, but recognizing that God is always using you in some way, right? Who are you to say that, you know what, that's it, game over? I think that's one of the hardest things for us to do, right? When we hit something, that's the end of the story. And even now, with how long my story has gone, I mean, that was 10, 12 years compacted into that kind of mess. And yet, you know, the story's still not over.
Be honest, were there times that you would feel like really disappointed and discouraged throughout this journey, detouring, all these things, or never?
Discouraged, I mean, who likes to be rejected, who likes to not get in?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just too dumb to recognize when I'm not doing so well, but you know, I don't think so. Like, at least it doesn't come to mind. There's too much good in there. I mean, I see a lot of, there's always hope. Like, there's one thing after another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, some of you may be wondering, you know, like, how could you jump around so much?
Mm-hmm.
I ask myself the same question. But it's, I guess for me when I was growing up, I was one of those people who could do a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of hard to narrow it down.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, to quit, no.
Yeah. You really have a high level, we call it resiliency. You bounce back quite, wow. So it's your turn to give a piece of advice to the parents or young people, especially about you have acquired a lot of different skill sets. Are they being wasted or no? Is beneficial down the road? Can you talk about that?
No. I mean, one of my mentors always says, you know, there's nothing wasted in God's economy. Right? And so I know in my heart I've been walking with the Lord for many years. And I think that's our anchor. As Christians, it anchors us in. Right? It always gives us hope if we turn our eyes to Him. I don't think there has been any wasted experiences. My undergrad, right? I was serving in worship. I never knew there was even a kind of a worship director or worship pastor position eventually. You know, and yet, in my heart of hearts now, like, I love what I'm doing. And the timing of it came together just, I think, I couldn't have planned it any better. Small business, you know, and doing sales in a computer company, you know, getting my expertise and experience with technology plays into what I do now. Whether it's, you know, sound equipment, light equipment, production, all that kind of stuff, right? We're looking at communication, you know, and working in today's world, like that plays in so often. Photography. Teaches me how to interact with people, how to make people feel comfortable, at the same time putting people in their best light and looking for the good in people, to bring that out in photos of them. You know, like, all of that plays into ministry, because now as a worship director and eventually, hopefully, as a worship pastor, like, I'm looking to see what is God doing in you, you know, and how do I bring you closer and further along in your path.
Okay. Now, watching the time a little bit, now we come to Nathan with the most experience so far. And
That means I'm the oldest.
I try to be more diplomatic. Okay, so Nathan's your turn.
Thank you. As a parent of a five-year-old, I really have learned a lot from my fellow panelists, so I just want to thank you guys for just helping me be a parent as well. So my journey, not so complicated, but after high school, I did expect to get into healthcare as a profession. Both my parents are healthcare professionals. I had affinity to science and math, and I genuinely wanted to help people in my career, so I felt that healthcare was likely a place that would suit me personally. And I completed my pharmacy degree at the University of Toronto. And after graduation, my first job was at a Shoppers Drug Mart. And I worked there for about a year and a half to 2 years. But during that time, I really wasn't sure whether that was what God wanted me to do. So I applied to medical school. And I had the opportunity to study medicine in Australia. Unfortunately, things didn't work out. There were barriers there, and I had to come to grips with a very difficult decision. One of the most difficult decisions of my life was to actually forego the rest of my medical school training. So I returned home and switched gears a bit, and started working in the hospital system as a pharmacist, and I've really been in that area of practice ever since. But during working full-time, I started to do some part-time studies. I went back to school to complete a master's degree, So I've just recently completed that work at Tyndale, and currently am in a managerial position at a children's hospital in Toronto.
Okay, Nathan, although it sounds like not as complicated, but still, when you told me that story, I still was intrigued by one thing, and that is, you said you went to Australia for 1 year, and then with the hope at the time to pursue your dream. But that 1 year became your turning point for your life, and make you realize that now instead of dream, you found your passion. But I still wonder how that 1 year was your turning point and how it makes you realize to find your passion.
I think for me, finding passion in my job is, like many of the people have shared, is finding myself in the center of God's will, knowing that that's exactly where God wants me to be. And leaving medical school, I took off the rose-colored glasses of being in an Asian culture and putting certain professions on a pedestal. I realized that it's more important that I'm where God wants me to be, and that God's wiring of myself is in the best place. I'm in the best place for that. And for me, I think I came back with the realization that our vocation, really, to God, it doesn't matter our status in the world, it doesn't really matter what our paycheck is, but it's how we fulfill His mission, fulfill His ministry in this world, in whatever, wherever we are at. Whether we're working in a secular environment, in a law firm, or whether we're working in a church setting like Glendon will be, it's how we fulfill God's mission in this world, and that's the most important thing. So for me, it was a very difficult decision. It was certainly very difficult. But I think my parents, they really said to me, they helped me work through that decision. They supported me all through it. And they basically said very, very simply, we love you no matter what you decide. We're going to support you and help you through that. So that really was for me.
I have another question for you. Now you have found your passion, your career, I think you have a baby?
5-year-old, yeah.
5-year-old, and then you have a good position, managerial position. What made you to go back to school, Tyndale? And even though I know it's part-time, but still, what's the motive behind the drive that made you go back to school?
A few things. One is to really solidify my faith and to be a leader in my family. But as you can see from all these examples, no longer is there really, in this day and age, you don't get a job, and usually you don't stay with that job for the rest of your life. So really being prepared for whatever God has in store for us as a family next, to prepare us for whatever stage that is, whether that's in Canada or abroad.
Your turn to give a piece of advice for the audience. Know your department manager right now at Sickest Hospital. Can you tell us what skill sets or qualities you as a leader or manager are looking for from your staff or from the applicants? What are the new things you have to advise us to watch for?
So as a hiring manager, I see a lot of resumes, I do a lot of interviews. I guess my advice would be that academics are certainly important. Job knowledge, certainly important. But many of the things that you need to learn and know on a job can be learned. The harder things to teach and the harder things to develop in somebody are the soft skills. Mm-hmm. the interpersonal skills, the collaboration, the teamwork, the communication, the critical thinking, the problem solving. Those skills are what I'm looking for in candidates. The job knowledge will come, and we can teach those things, but it's how the individual can present themselves and work as part of a team that's the most successful candidate. So I guess if I could sum up some advice in that area. Number one is, I think as parents, provide your kids with as broad a range of experience as you can. Coming back to what Jeremy said at the very beginning, I think it is really important to get involved in different things, in not just academic things, but really stretch yourselves to join clubs, to do extracurricular activities. And so as parents, I think providing our children with those broad range of experiences will teach them some of those skills that will help them in their future. And I guess for kids or for teens, my advice would be to build your resume. Get a summer job. When I look at resumes, I can see those who really just are singularly focused on education and academics, but really don't spend a lot of time volunteering, getting involved in church, different things like that. Because what we're looking for is a well-rounded individual. And my other only advice to teens would be that your first job may not be your dream job, that sometimes you have to work at it, and you have to do some of the not-so-great jobs until you get to the place where you have your dream job.
So you get it? Okay. How's it so far? Good? You like the story? Okay. Now, it's a turn. I have one big question, more general question for all of them. So feel free to jump in and then respond to it. There are three things. Okay, where are these three things? Passion. You heard a lot of talk about passion. Parents. A lot of parents here. And God. These three things in your post-secondary or career journey so far. Where are these three things in your journey?
I guess I can start first. Well, passion. Man, that's a big word, because nowadays it's not just about passion. How can we make money, right? You know, you have a lot of people who have passion, but you know, they want to be an artist, musician, but the area is so difficult to make money in. So what I was taught was, you know, be passionate in what you do, and because where your passion is where you will excel. And so luckily, I was raised in a business family. I'm talking at the dinner table every single day about business. But I noticed that in myself, it's a matter of also, what do you talk about with your friends? You know, for me, I was a little evangelist growing up. I would sit in the corner of daycare and I'd tell Bible stories to my fellow classmates. And so what did I notice? I noticed I cared about people, cared people's well-being. I always wanted to see someone, you know, just have improvements in their life. So I noticed I was passionate about it. So I said to myself, oh, okay, now my parents are telling me, okay, now you gotta make money. So what is that? So I brought that into business, and you know, I brought it into marketing, which is consumer behavior, how people react to what I tell them, pretty much, how I market my ideas. And so, you know, what you're passionate about in terms of business or even making money out of it, you still have to find that correct path so that you can excel in the business world. But also, you also have to be happy with what you're doing. For the parents, it's the same theme. It's all about support. One of the worst things that I see, not so much in my parents, but in my friends, is they take failure and and they take, you know, whenever they don't prove themselves, they feel that they can't, like they don't know how to express themselves. They don't know, they become depressed, but they don't know why they're depressed. Why? It's usually because parents' expectation. You know, parents' expectation is so high that when your son or daughter comes short, you don't know how to react. You just feel angry. You just feel, oh, my son is not good enough. But in reality, you have to flip it. You have to know how your kid is taking it. I think that my parents really understood that a lot about me, that, you know, okay, because my brother's a genius. I'm not the smartest one in my family. I may be able to talk well, but in terms of taking down numbers, writing essays, whatever, no, my brother's way better. My brother's in mechatronics in Waterloo, something crazy. But at the end of the day, my parents identified the skill differences between my brother and I. And so they trained us to improve on what we were, what we excelled at as individuals. You know, because if you try to enforce something, and they may try their hardest, but, you know, there's no passion there. Right? It's all intertwined. And the third one is God. And it's, in my opinion, what God has to do with this is, you know, God gives us gifts, right? The fruits of the Spirit. And if we can identify the gifts that God gives us, and we say, okay, how can I use myself or everyday life as a platform to share the gospel? And how can I use my talent, my passion, and to express these things? Right? And honestly, that comes from parents' teaching. So all three are very connected, you know? And really, it all comes back to the parents and how you train your children. And I give thanks every day. I pray to God. I say, thank you for giving me such wonderful parents who can train me to, you know, handle problems, handle rough times, and just always pick myself back up. You know, my parents, they always say it's not a matter of failure. It's a matter of how you stand back up, and it's about how you stand in this world. And I believe in my testimony when I was baptized, I said my past is not indicative of what I'll become. Because in our past, we always have, I failed a lot. I mean, I'm sure most of you have failed a lot, but it's how we overcome, how we learn, and we just don't make the same mistake twice. And a lot of that has to do with faith in God, you yourself with passion, and your parents with support.
Okay, so I hope I don't repeat too much, but in terms of passion, I didn't know what my passion was. I didn't know I wanted to be a lawyer until I tried it. So I think some people are born knowing exactly what they want to be, and that's exactly what they do, and they're so happy doing it. If you don't know what your passion is, I think that's probably more normal. Most teenagers don't know what their passion is, and that's fine. You just have to keep trying different things, and if you, the more things you try, the more likely it is that you'll stumble onto something you like. And even if you try something that you don't like, they'll tell you something about yourself. They'll tell you what you're good at, what you're bad at, what you don't like, which helps you make a more informed decision for what new thing you're going to try. And so I really didn't know I wanted to be a lawyer until I was in law school, realized I loved everything I was doing. And I didn't know what area of law I wanted to practice in until I was at the big firm where I got to try 4 different areas of law. And that's how I realized that labor law was what I wanted to do. And so sometimes it just takes trying a lot of new things, but trying a lot of new things also means there's going to be a lot of zigzagging and a lot of you know, failures or turnarounds. But that's how you find your passion, or that's how I found it. With parents, I think my parents, I mean, I don't really know. I feel like I have to ask my parents and maybe they'll know more, but I'm assuming they were very worried at different times for me. Whenever I failed and I was sad about it, I'm sure they were even more sad, even more anxious, and even more worried than I was. But they were very good about not letting me see their worries, and I think that helped, because if I knew how worried they were, I think that would have doubled my anxiety, and it would have paralyzed me, and I would have felt it like a burden. But instead, they were able to, you know, they worried maybe in private with each other, but with me, they were always very encouraging about, you know, trying to help me work through what I should do. And that was enough for me to take practical steps to get out of whatever trouble or situation I was in, and that was instrumental to me to get to where I am today. And with God, I don't think God ever told me, or I never heard a voice that was like, you will be a lawyer, you know, you'll help employees fix their life. I never heard that, but I think sometimes God can tell you things through practical ways, like finding out if you're good at something and you are made to be good at that, then that's probably what you should be doing. And if, and on top of that, you like that good thing that you have talent in, that's probably God being like, you should do that. So.
All right. When I think about passion, my passion, looking back, I think my passion for worship, for the church, has always been there. But I think it was always kind of being pushed against with the pressure of expectations, whether it's culturally, as a Chinese person, or just, you know, expectations from outsiders and worrying about what other people would think. So that was kind of how passion, kind of what passion looked like in my life. It was always kind of pushing against the pressure of expectations. It was always there, but it's always a constant refining. And I think as I look at my journey, the core was there. It was fuzzy, but it was always kind of, okay, little parts of it would carry over into the next thing. And eventually now, I look at it, I'm like, wow, I've got pieces from all the different things that I've done, and which pour into my passion for what I get to do today. I think it also really shows me what lifelong learning actually means. You know, as we grow older, I think we learn more about ourselves, but I think we also have to have due diligence with learning more about the world around us, right, and how our passion fits into what the world looks like now. When I think about my parents, I'm sure they lost a lot of sleep with all my turns. But one thing they always did let me know is that they trusted me. And they didn't say that because I think they just wanted to say that. I think they knew me, they raised me, and they trusted me, even if it didn't look like the way they wanted it to. And my dad is someone who always is very concerned about the worst case scenario. So whenever, you know, Dad, I think I want to do this. Well, what about this? What about that? What about that? Okay, yes. Thank you. And I had to learn how to receive that as love. Receive that as his way of showing love. Instead of going, why do you have to rain on my parade? Why do you have to shoot me down and crush my dreams? Kind of thing. You know, no, that's his way of showing his love. Right? And that doesn't always come across. It doesn't translate all the time. Right? So for parents and for kids, you know, take that as, you know, crossing generations, I guess. And finally, God. God in all of this, I would say, was very patient with me. you know, eventually it came to a point where I was like, what am I waiting for? What's holding me back? Right? And God was very patient through the whole process, not letting me out of his sight, not letting me go, and eventually I stopped running. So, patient, and he was always present.
Just quickly for me, parents definitely all through unconditional support and love. Passion and God to me together, very, very closely. Really trusting that God has a plan for my life and that it's a good plan. And that when I am in, again, in God's will, then that's where I find my passion.
Right. I think you have heard a lot tonight. So maybe before we open the floor for questions, let me sum up some of the key points that we're talking about tonight. And maybe I have a couple of statistics even to share with you. Okay, I wonder if you noticed there are a couple of terms or words that kept popping up during the sharing and discussions. Detouring and zigzagging. I think this is a new reality. It's a new reality facing our younger generations. So when I early on when I said that we have to start let go of our preconceived notion of what means success or career path, this is what I meant. I think we have to start looking for the real thing. I think this is a new survival skills. And I think, as a matter of fact, I think it's now unwise to set our career goals too rigidly. I think it's totally unwise, and especially even Nathan was pointing out that who knows what the next journey, the path will go for. So this is one thing. And another thing, but detouring though, I just want to remind you, it's not a blind exercise either. It's not just detour blindly, I just detour. You still have a destiny or goal. But what is your destiny or goal? And I don't think the destiny or goal is maybe a specific career, maybe a lawyer, a doctor, or profession. I don't think that is the destiny or goal. And to me, it's going back to passion. I think a destiny is our passion. And they all articulate very well that, again, for me as Christians, I think God has implanted a passion in us long, long time ago. It's a matter that He would like us to find it through our journey, to search it, to discover it over time. It won't be just that your passion is it. I don't think so. It's a lifelong search and journey. And it may, as Glendon pointed out, may be refined and modified a little bit. But there must be ultimate passion. So I just want to tell you that don't go home tonight and say, these guys, Pendulous and Maria Tan, just detour. It's not just detour blindly. Like every time when Glendon tried to move around, to change course, I think he kept asking a lot of questions, don't you? It's not just, oh, opportunity, I go for this, I jump for it. Not like that, not randomly. But talking about detouring of the passion, I just want to remind, this is my personal reminder for our Asian mothers or Asian parents. We always forgotten that it's God, not us, not we, who have the plan, unique plan for each of our children. It's not us. It's Him. And our role is how to support them accordingly. Unfortunately, a lot of time, we have become the God of our children. We want them to meet our expectations. We want them to meet our wishes. So be careful. We're not God. It's Him. And talking about that, we also have another thing we have overseen. And that is, while we try to push our kids to all the academic and professional fields, we have forgotten that over there are so many interesting fields out there that your kids may be passionate about or excel in. For example, how about a chef? How about a carpenter? How about a good electrician? Or even how about an entrepreneur in a new area? Who knows? Let me give you some statistics here. Very ironically, while we kept talking about youth unemployment or underemployment, blah, 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 all those things, do you know that in almost all developed countries, including Canada, that there's a huge shortage of labor in skilled trades, which provide lucrative, attractive incomes and benefits? Why can't we raise our children, if it's that is what the talents or gifts from God, to be a good tradesman, very cultured, very intellectual, very spiritual, to earn a good, decent life and lifestyle? Why not? As a matter of fact, in Germany, just doing a little bit of research, in Germany, they have the lowest youth unemployment rate. It's 7.5%. Compared to Canada, it's 14.5%, so we are double. Compared to even Sweden, 25% youth unemployment rate. Compared to, what is it, Italy, 40%. Compared to Spain and Greece, over 50%. The reason why Germany has such a low youth unemployment rate is because 40% of the high schoolers are apprentices. In Germany, they are very strict about training in engineering, good apprentices, not just I don't know how Chinese is the term, but anyway, good apprentices. So they're very employable. And Germany is one of the very successful countries, at least in terms of economics and industry, etc. So why don't we just restart our new thinking?
talking about all these, but young people, I really strongly want to encourage you, when even if you have a university degree, I encourage you to work in the trenches. Start for the beginning. Don't think that I'm finishing my whatever BA degree or MA degree, I'm coming, I'm a manager. There are some people coming and look for employment like that. We would never, never hire them. Okay, so young people, I would hope that because you need all this experience, no matter how high scores, just like Nathan was talking about, no matter how high your grades are, experiences is the key for your future success. And two more points I'd like to just remind us and then also as parents is don't let other people or even yourself to pigeonhole yourself. And here I'd like to quote a book that I just came across. I couldn't buy it because it's out of stock, but I could find it from the online. And like, this is interesting. He said, don't limit yourself by what you went to school for or confine yourself to what you thought you wanted 5 years ago. Be prepared to move beyond your college degree, what your parents wanted for you, and the things you wanted once upon a time. So, don't be afraid of change. And talking about change as parents, because I work in education, I always believe that early years or early on, nurturing is also important. So when your kids are still in high school or elementary schools, again, all four panelists are talking about, it's not just about academics. We have to really start nurturing our kids how to be resilient, just like what I said Nathan about, how to be adaptable, how to be flexible, how to be versatile, how to be open-minded, how to think outside the box, how to be creative, how to be critical thinking and lifelong learning. These are the things that we always ignore. And we just look at the marks and grades, how to get to the best university so that they can go to law school or medicine, or blah, blah, blah. But Nathan just testified that this is not enough. It's the person. And of course, also detouring, etc., all require risk-taking. Why not? Because there's a lot of uncertainty. But I just want to repeat, remind myself, remind other parents, do we as parents have enough love, enough patience, enough trust, and finally enough faith in God to allow our children to have some failures or mistakes while they navigate through the journeys? And I want to quote, I always like to just quote Joshua chapter 1:9, for young people, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So, thank you. Okay, I think now
we can open the floor to question and answer.
Yes.
Question. I heard about the zigzagging. I wonder how many of you have a student loan or have ever had student loan? Or is it all paid for by your parents?
But that is a reality for a lot of students, about the student loans.
I don't have student loans, but my friends in law school are all graduating with six-figure student loans because law school at U of T costs just under $30,000 a year. And it's a really heavy workload, so you can't really go to school and work part-time. It just doesn't work. Unfortunately, sometimes practicalities like finances affect your decision about what career you should choose, but it doesn't stop you from exploring through extracurriculars or different clubs or talking to people about what you want to do. I think that exploration is so important regardless of how much debt you might be carrying.
For me, I don't have student loans either, but I go to college. The tuition is less than $30,000. It's I believe it's like $8,000. Something really, really cheap. So like in comparison to the university. And I'm gonna tell you that I forgot to mention this in my story, but ever since, like I said in the beginning, my parents always told me to do something. You can't just sit at home and watch TV. And ever since I was 13 years old, I started working. I worked every summer. I always found a part-time job. And my resume for a 22-year-old is amazing, in my opinion. I don't know. But, like, I have a lot of experience. And experience is what have gotten me most of my jobs. This is the truth. In the last 6 jobs I've had, I've never failed an interview. And I've always been hired on the spot. It's usually because they look at my past history that I've always been doing something. I always am active, and I love making changes. I love excelling in every workplace I have that I work in. And so, you know, you have to get out of there. You have to explore. And, you know, it's not like we've been talking about, it's not just about school, it's about being active as a person and even as a Christian.
For me, no, yeah, no student loans, thank goodness, thank God. I'm very blessed by my parents, and I can't say much more than that. I've been very lucky to have that opportunity. I know not everyone does.
And the same for me, and we're starting to save money now for our daughter.
That's a really good point, because I forgot to mention that as well. I trust my parents trust me, and that's just it. The reason why I've been able to be who I am is because of my parents. In fact, you could also say maybe I rely on my parents, and because, you know, so how do you develop trust? Now, going through high school, you know, you have a lot of friends that you meet that may not be good friends. I actually grew up with terrible influences, and I couldn't get away from them, because no matter how hard my parents tried to force me, they said, you know, I hate your friends, whatever, blah, 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 don't bring them home, all these things. But, you know, my parents actually, it got to a point where I was very rebellious. So how do you deal with that? I'll tell you what my parents did. My parents said, you know, rather than saving you and just caring about you, I'm going to save all your friends. So my mom actually, what she did was she invited all my friends to my house. We began a Bible study, and we created something called a Thursday Night Bible Study. We actually brought 5 of my friends to Christianity because of that Bible study. It just shows you how much my parents got involved with me, because they love me. You know, they care about me, but they'll go through leaps and bounds just for me. And so, you know, it's the same thing to bring to you guys. You know, you should all love your kids, you know, and you should do everything in your power to make sure that your parents will be well. I mean, that your kids will be well. You know, it's like I said before. It's, you know, you try really hard. Like, don't get me wrong. My parents had high expectations for me, and I failed them many times. Okay, but you know, at the end of the day. Sorry, parents, you gotta suck it up. And you gotta, like, you gotta move on, okay? It's not about what happened before. You gotta move on and look at what's ahead in front of you and look at the opportunities that are given to you.
So, when I first started university, I think I used to try to keep the bad things away from my parents. So, if I didn't do very well in school or, I don't know, something that I wasn't too proud of, I tried to not tell them, and I think our relationship wasn't the best at that time because I was trying to keep all these bad things away from them. And it was just because I was scared they would stop loving me or stop caring about me, or, you know, that I let them down. And it took time for me to see that every time I thought I screwed up, they were still there. So when I didn't complete my LSAT, which meant I wouldn't be able to get into law school, they were still there saying, you know, you can do it, try again, you just wanted this too badly, you know, we can pray about it, we still love you. Maybe they didn't say it like that. Like, I don't think my parents ever said, we love you. But, because we're Asian and we don't say those things, but I got the message. And then every time I made another mistake,
every time they would reinforce that message. And so over time, as I grew up, I realized I can trust my parents. I can tell them these bad things. And instead of hiding it from them, I can actually talk to them about it and work it through with them so that the last very challenging time, which was when I wasn't hired back, my parents were actually with me, dealing with the situation with me, because they had built up my trust in them by being consistently there for me. And I think on my part, it just took time for me to grow up and realize that they were there for me, even if, you know, it didn't seem like it.
I think for me, growing up, actually, I didn't have a super warm, fuzzy relationship with my parents. They were very, like, I don't know what it was, but they were very much like, well, we always just thought you'd be okay, and I guess they always called me an easy kid to raise. So I didn't really get into too much trouble. I guess I naturally spent a lot of time around the church helping, and so I don't know if that the trust was built up on their end because of the choices that I made. It doesn't mean I always had the best friends. Yeah, I definitely had some friends who were in some gangs, but you know, but I guess they saw the decisions that I made, and that trust was built up along the way. And then, if anything, I had to learn to trust them in being able to communicate with them and learn how to kind of evolve how we communicated, right? As I grew up and kind of our roles kind of changed from like adult, like child, to, you know, here's where I'm coming from. I need you to hear me, but I also need to learn to hear them and what they're saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, just echoing that, trust definitely comes from communication. It's the open, non-judgmental communication between parent and child, and working through these things together that makes to make your children as, you know, comfortable to come to you in any situation.
I just wanted to add, this is a good exercise to develop trust, but my parents do a lot. At the dinner table, this is the question: what did you learn today? You know, that's it. That's all it takes. And then when you have engaging conversation like that, and as parents, never stop learning yourself, okay? Always be continuous learners. And because if you learn with your kids, you yourself will, you know, you'll learn more, and you guys can excel together a lot together. So also strip away your pride of your expectations. You know, because with parents, you know, we have a lot of expectations for our kids, and some of us become very defensive, and we stand very firmly with what we expect. But like I said, just go through it with your kids, and both of you will be happy.
How did God tell you about His will for your future?
Okay, so for me, from a student's side. Okay, so he asked, how did God, I guess, what is God's role in my life and what I wanted for my future? as a young one, honestly, we're naive, okay? We don't know much. We haven't experienced life, okay? You haven't experienced life. So what's the next best thing you can do? Is pray. You have to pray. And I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't pray. Because, you know, when you're young, you don't know what is right, what is wrong. You don't know your limits. So all I could do was, when I was tested with challenges, was pray, God, what do you want me to do? What do you truly want me to do that will glorify your kingdom? And if you keep praying, then the next step is just watching and listening. And God will tell you, God will show you, He will open doors for you, as long as you remain faithful in that.
As you mentioned, the parents are not allowed from the youth, right? I would like to know, as you, the guys, what do you expect from your parents? And what do you think it would improve and narrow down the gap between the parents and the youth?
Anyone want to give us that?
Do I mean myself here?
Yeah. Okay, so from my personal experience, nowadays, people, all they want to do is be cool, you know? And sometimes, like, you know, your kids won't even show, tell your their friends to say hi to your parents because they don't think you're cool. And it's like that a lot, especially with very traditional families where there's a lot of respect in the household. So really, as parents, you have to understand what is going on, even in the new generation, and, you know, look at the trends of other kids. And you really have to, I guess, get to know your son or daughter a little bit more. And once they can, you can, they can identify certain things with you, you know, then yeah, I'll be out there.
I think I wanted my parents to trust that I was making the right decisions, to trust that they had raised me right, given me the right, all the skills I needed, and given me the morals that I needed to make good decisions. And so I'm sure when I switched into psychology, I'm sure a part of them didn't completely understand, A, what is psychology, B, what jobs can it lead to, not very many, and C, why I was attracted to it. But my parents tried to, I think they tried to keep those opinions to themselves, and I think that's what I needed. I needed them to give me space and time to try different things, to figure things out, and to discover what I like and what I'm good at. And so I think that helped. Like, I expected, not expected, but I think my parents gave me what I need by stepping to the side and giving me time to try different things, even though, you know, if they didn't think I would like psychology, they were right. I didn't end up in it. I just needed 3 years in it to find that out for myself.
Sorry, the question was, how do you kind of close that gap between...
Two questions.
Yeah.
Your expectation.
Oh, the expectations for the parents, right? Okay.
And also, how to bring it down.
And how do you manage that gap? Wow. I think, let's look at how do we narrow down the gap. You know, something I know that means a lot in my life actually would be to hear my parents say to say that they're proud of me. And those are words that carry a lot of weight. I think as Chinese people, we don't say it a lot, just like, I love you. Yeah, I think that can go a long way. And I know, I'm sure it's probably difficult sometimes to look for things that maybe that you are proud of them for when they're going down the wrong path. But when those opportunities come, like, I hope you take advantage of that to tell them, right? Expectations for the parents. I think my expectation would be that that they want to be part of my life, and that I expect that they would want the best for me.
Yeah, I think definitely echo that. To narrow the gap, I think parents accept kids even though we may make mistakes, and don't bring it up again. Don't remember that time. Like, that's not helpful. I think we learn together through those things, and that's part of God forming us. So working with your kids through these zigzags in life, because I don't think in God's plan they are mistakes.
Sorry, I also, could we bring it back to actually to his question too? Because I know that's a tough question. You know, how do you discern God's will for your life? It took me a while. Sometimes, I think some things to add to that would be time. It takes time. But the other thing, you know, read the Word, get to know God, right? Because if you don't know him, you can't know what his will is for your life. Thirdly, yeah, a lot of prayer. I think the other thing too is look at what brings a reaction out of you. Sometimes there are things that really, like, what really irks you, really bothers you. Like, maybe that's what you're passionate about. Like, I can't believe I'm seeing that, you know? Or on the other hand, it's like, you know, I really love this, you know? So I think you take all those things together, take it in line with godly counsel around you for people who know you, and then run with it.
Thank you very much for what you have shared with us. Like, they're very helpful. So my question is, so for those high school students, especially like grade 12 students who are, you know, struggling with like what program to choose or like what university to choose, do you have any advice for them?
It's always okay to take a leap year. Okay, seriously, it really is. I did it, and because you don't want to go into something for 3 years and then say, I can't do this anymore, okay? You'd rather take that year, but don't do nothing, okay? Like I said, always doing something, you know? Even if you work at Tim Hortons, you might find a passion in Tim Hortons and then you go study about it, okay? Just always be doing something, because like I said, you keep doing something, God will use that as an opportunity to open doors.
I think when you're making your decision, don't think of it as you have to get your decision right now. If you don't decide on the right program when you're 17 years old and in grade 12, you're ruining your entire life. That's not true. It feels that way, but it's not true. Because you can go into really an undergraduate degree is, to be honest, most often not that helpful anymore anyways in landing a job. An undergraduate degree is just usually not enough. So that first degree is just for you to discover yourself and to discover your learning style. I know a lot of people in jobs that are totally unrelated to that degree, but they totally love it. So it's an important decision. I'm not saying don't think about it, but don't pressure yourself into making that decision, because at the end of the day, you can change your program. I did. A lot of people do. They change programs midway and you get credits from that first year and it's fine. Or you, after your bachelor degree, you realize what you like and you take a second degree that is more practical and applicable. For example, law school, you don't need any degree. I know someone whose first degree was in opera singing and then she's a lawyer now. And she's a very smart lawyer at that. So it's all to say, don't give yourself more pressure than you have to when it comes to these big decisions. And I think that applies to parents too. Give your kids the freedom to make that decision, because again, at the end of the day, it really doesn't determine their life. What they study when they're 20 is not going to be at all related to what they're doing when they're 40 years old.
I don't have much to add to that, except for, you know, do your research. You know, take it at least, like, to know what's possible, right? And to know yourself, and again, exactly what you're saying, it's not the end of the world. It's another step.
Any other questions?
Oh, sure. So, if you were able to live your life again, so is there anything that you want to change, or is there anything you feel like made you right?
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I think we're still living it. So far, no. For me, no regrets. Definitely found where God wants me to be right now, and where He leads, I don't know, but trusting that He's got that in His hands.
Yeah, with all my twists and turns, no regrets. Honestly, I if He wanted me to plan out my life to get to this point, I mean, I wouldn't even know how to begin.
I'd worry less. I think I worried a lot when I was growing up. Like, it kept me up at night, thinking, what do I want to do? What am I good at? Why do I suck at what I'm doing right now? I just worry less. You're going to figure it out at some point, so you might as well enjoy what you're doing and try not to give yourself a heartburn doing it, you know?
I've made many failures. I've made many mistakes. You could say that I regret it all, but I've taken all of what I failed at, and I've made the most out of it. And so that's what you have to really be thinking about.
I guess one thing I can think of is I would try to figure out how I study best or how I work best earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think I let my marks in my head, I thought, oh, I'm fine. But when it came down to it, when things started to get harder, I'm like, how do I study? I never needed to study before. Right? And I actually had to figure that out on the fly when things kind of got higher stakes. So while you're younger, you know, even if, say, you did well, what, you know, how do you study? How do you learn? I think that's important. And I think that can help.
Okay, so we